Good morning, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today, I have the honor and the pleasure to be joined by Konstantin Svenkov. And Konstantin is the CEO of Intento, and today's topic, we're going to be talking about the state of machine translation for 2024, a report that Konstantin and E2F, Intento and E2F have put together. And I can't wait to dig into the details of the report. It's very interesting information that they've gathered. The report is very in-depth. And Konstantin, welcome to the channel. Glad to have you with me this morning. And I'd like to say on this channel, Konstantin, is everybody has a localization story. I can't wait to hear yours so we can add it to the library of good stories that we've heard for the 77 episodes that we've done so far on this channel. And every one of them had had a story which I categorize in two, three ways. One is I came to the localization industry by accident. The second one on purpose, and the third one, somebody reminded me of it not too long ago, accidentally on purpose. So can't wait to hear your story. The floor is yours, Konstantin. If you don't mind introducing yourself. Okay.
Thanks for inviting me. Yes. CEO and co-founder of Intento. Localization story. Well, I think, yes, it falls into the third bucket, I guess. I mean, I worked as a translator briefly when I was writing my PhD years back. So when we started to build a company, we, with my partner Gregory, we focused on quite general problem at the beginning, is just general observation that it's like super hard to use AI as an enterprise company. You need lots of people to do that. Those people do mistakes. There is no platform for that. And we kind of, as engineers, we had a hypothesis that the problem should be somewhere in the engineering side, of course, to have our hammer, you know. So it should be something with, you know, those APIs being hard to integrate, hard to understand which one to choose. And then we started to look where we can, where this problem is very big, what industry is very big. And I noticed just one of the industries, which is translation industry, which we looked at. And I noticed that the price for machine translation is back then is 300 times different. I was like, wow, should be interesting. Let's look closer. And that's where actually we ran our first report, because the hypothesis was, oh, maybe the quality is also correlated to the price. So you buy a system for $3, it's like crap. You buy a system for $300, it's a miracle. Let's just check that it's the case and move on. We checked, and it was not the case. This, actually, we published our first report in 2017, with this being the most important focus of this report. And that's where actually I started, because I think I applied with that first report to the Lock World in Santa Clara, I think. And at the same time, we were invited into Accelerator at UC Berkeley. That's when I moved to Berkeley. And it's quite close. It's like a couple of hour drive. That's why I got to the conference. And that was my first exposure to the industry. And then it was a very long journey, because at some point we decided to focus on the enterprise. We started to talk to a lot to localization managers to understand what was struggling with. I still feel myself a newbie. I'm like, I'm an imposter. I'm not. No, I haven't spent 20 years in this industry. So,
you know what? You know what? You seem to be making quite a positive wave in the industry, and by now you are a native into the industry. I wouldn't dare, you know, using the word imposter at all. You're a mover and shaker in the industry. You're an expert, and I have the pleasure and the honor to have you on the call today. And I was looking forward for this conversation. Konstantin, for those who don't know Intento, you know, like a lot of people, like, you know, a lot of our companies in our industry, sometimes it feels like they're hiding under a rock somewhere, because we don't do a lot of, you know, visibility, conversations, podcasting, etc. And that's the reason I created this channel. Can you tell us a little bit about Intento?
Yeah. And, you know, it's very different today from when we founded, like, 7 years ago. Originally, it was all about basically solving this problem, which I mentioned, so that you have like 40 different APIs, which you can use for translation, 40 different machine translation systems. Back then, you couldn't even use them for different languages. So your TMS, you should choose one for like everything in your project. And we built a system which was basically like a broker, where you can route your request to the right machine translation system, depending on the language. But many things changed since then. On technology side, now you can customize your models. You can actually use LLMs to orchestrate them. You can do like automatic post editing, source code improvement, automation, all these things. And also lots of things changed on just how we work with customers and how we understand the problems. So what it is of today, the situation is as follows. So we work with big companies. Only we have about 60 large enterprise customers. And as a big company, you want to do localization, right? So but many people understand localization as translating content, and it's not. It's translating experience, right? And if you look what this experience is built, so that like for all your non-English speaking users, the experience as consistent and authentic as for English speaking. But this experience is built of many, many interactions of users with different software systems. And as much as you want to have them all translated, the typical situation is that you go, website is in 20 languages, application is in 10, help center is in 4, live chat, oh, sorry, English, and maybe Spanish if you press 9. So that's sort of where we are. And it's clear why, because those different software systems, they owned by different departments. Most of them actually isn't even connected to TMS. And most of them require real-time translations. Just there is no way to do that with translation memories and humans and LSPs and stuff like that. So what we do, we build a platform where you can configure automatic translation workflows. And as of today, it's not only machine translation, it's lots of this stuff to make it better. And then from this like central point, we connect those workflows to all those software systems. And kind of a bit of our know-how is how to make kind of single set of models work for all these different use cases on the enterprise side. But what most important is that since it comes from central point, you can have your enterprise, you know, tone of voice, brand voice, all your preferential requirements met consistently across all those systems you work with. So that's what we do. And just small addition to that, another thing which I think we do quite differently is we built a pretty solid team which takes care of setting up those AI configurations and AI solutions, because we found that most of the companies, there is just not enough internal expertise to train their own.
So am I correct to assume that most of your staff are tech? In the tech skills, like engineers, software developers, etc.
Oh no, I would say it's probably like 30% engineers, 30% is people who help like solutions, all sorts of solutions,
okay.
And implementation, and 30% okay. Commercial.
Excellent. Well, quite the journey, 7 years, and you know, you've been on an accelerated speed in terms of evolution, growth, you know, and developing the platform. Developing platform is not a small task. And if, you know, for those who don't know how to develop small, platforms such as this, and I can't wait to dig into the report that we want to talk about today that you've published together with E2F. Which we had Michelle Lopez on the conversation here before on this podcast early on last year when I first started. Mm-hmm. A great conversation we had together, and the transformation that E2F has been going through to go from legacy to what I call legacy localization to the more innovative way of providing the service using a hybrid technology and human at the same time. So it's a great phenomenon that is. You guys are leading in the industry as well, and several other companies are leading in the industry as well. Those are being transformed versus the companies that they're deciding to hunker down and do the the artisan way, if you will, in doing the business. So take me through, if you don't mind, one first question before we get started in the report. Why the report and why now? Like, why? What made you think, okay, we need to, and I'm assuming you've done 2023 reports. Sorry, I did not have a chance to look at those. Is that something you do on a yearly basis, or is it your first time doing this type?
So that's what I kind of briefly mentioned. So we ran first in 2017, just to understand, what's on the market. Mm-hmm. That was just a year after Neural Google Translate was released, right? So everything was very unclear. SMT, rule-based, NMT. Back then the situation was that most of the companies just pick single provider based on what your procurement department or, analysts are telling you, and you just use it blindly. So back then, we were newbies, and the goal was to understand what's there. And since then, we run it every year. And for us, it's important that although today we build quite complex solutions, right, with customization, with different models mixed in, we need to understand what building blocks to use, depending on the domain, depending on the language. And we use this annual exercise as a chance to update our understanding of the market. Not only in the report, you may find information about prices, information about performance, information about speed, mm-hmm. but also we look at things like language support and features and just what's new on the market. We just do it on an annual basis. It actually requires immense amount of effort, and I just think that we need to share that, because if everyone will be doing that in-house, it just will be lots of wasted resources. Let's just save them.
You know, browsing through the report, and thanks for sending me the report before our call today, what struck me the most is the amount of machine translations that are available out there. And you've done a good job in capturing all of them, I guess, I'm pretty sure you'll tell me this is probably what you guys know about, but there are probably some other ones that they're not visible enough. But the sheer amount of machine translation solutions out there and the providers that they're coming out with machine translation solutions. So, the industry knows probably the top five, right? So they probably know DeepL, they probably know Google, RWS, and AWS, and a few other things. Mm-hmm. But what you've presented in the report, the amount of the machine translation, and I think there's like 50 of them out there. What is the mm-hmm. Why is that? Like, why is everybody now wants to create their own machine translation instead of hopping on or using somebody else's machine translation?
I think in general, machine translation business is quite specific, and there are a few reasons I think why companies do that. I think there are companies like basically major clouds and other cloud providers. And for them, it's kind of, I think it's changing, but I think originally it was more like a loss leader service. Basically, if someone has a contract with your cloud, they also need machine translation and some other services. So you just bring them in and you develop them with being main business being the cloud. I think it may be changing. But I think originally it was this way. There are companies dedicated to the machine translation like DeepL, Globalize, some others. There's also a number of machine translation systems done by large language service providers, with also quite understandable because they have translators working for customers. It's more convenient for them to use their own system because they can get efficiency in this human in the loop thing. And then I think this new breed of systems, which they develop large language model for, typically without translation in mind at all. So as of today, the main focus of large language models can be different things. But machine translation is a byproduct. And that's actually quite interesting, because that's where we see, I think, major change. Because those other use cases, they are very different. Like, if you, for example, like you want to do AI assistance and you want to do chats, so you use this kind of GPT style models, but to maintain the conversation, it's extremely long context window. you need, like, remember, it's, it should be very long, or to do Q&A over a large document in extremely long context window. So they actually built their pricing to afford those other use cases. But since in translation we have short input, short output, when we leverage this system, we get very cheap, very inexpensive translation. It's like 20, 40 times cheaper than machine translation because it's a byproduct. They didn't optimize the pricing for translation tasks. So very interesting. I think there is less reasons to use many systems. Mm-hmm. But I think as if we look at our what we actively use, it will be about 10 to 15 systems still, because there is always some languages or some specific requirements where we need to go to companies, we need to go to Chinese providers for specific variations of Chinese, we need to go to, for example, Naver for Korean translations in certain cases, and so on.
So in your report, sticking with the topic of the machine translation, what has changed in 2024? Like, what are the major observations that you've seen in terms of the machine translation evolution and the large language model? I guess that's a different topic. They go together, but it's a bit aside. For now, sticking to machine translation.
That's a good question. So I think the major change actually related to LLMs.
Okay.
Machine translation, we see that the quality is growing. And just as a matter of fact, I know that in some of the systems, or quality is growing. On the back end, they're actually starting to introduce LLMs, like to polish their output and so on. And another thing, which is actually may not be well widely known, but some of the machine translation providers actually for already a year or two, sometimes more, using LLMs internally. They kind of disguise them as machine translation, but since the technology is quite similar, actually those systems are just kind of prompted in them.
So you mean, Constantin, are we in a phase where machine translation and large language models are meshing together?
No, I mean that some of the machine translation offerings, which you know is machine translation, actually it's an LLM with prompts internally. I won't tell you which ones because I have NDA, but as a matter of fact, I just want to say that this kind of, when people say, oh, that's machine translation, that's all boring technology we can rely on and use, and this is, sorry,
okay,
LLMs is a new shiny thing we should be afraid of, the border is very blurry, and the technology is very similar. It's trained in different ways, but it's transformers. Essentially, it's kind of similar technology. And in many cases, it's marketed as machine translation, but what's under the hood, you don't know. Sometimes under the hood, you have LLM. Sometimes under the hood, you have what today you would call RAG, where basically they retrieve stuff from translation memory and transform it for you, and so on. Under the hood, it's...
Yeah, Constanza, you talked in the report on the comparative between in terms of performance between large language model and and machine translation. Can you elaborate a little bit on this one? Are they equal? Are one of them superior to another, etc.?
Yeah, so that's what changed a lot this year. So last year we already evaluated a couple of systems. But we've seen them in a few cases getting to the top, but machine translation, well, traditional machine translation systems were prevalent. And now they just go together. And almost for every language variant domain in the top, you see both traditional machine translation and translation through large language models. It's important to say, though, that this report is built for machine translation, to assess machine translation systems. So it does certain kind of narrows the problem to the scope which typically solved by machine translation, meaning that we translate individual segments, so we're not comparing on full text. Those are mostly sentences which can be translated without context because the context is not available and machine translation cannot work with contexts.
Yep.
What's the point? And by context, I don't mean text context. I mean metadata kind of mm-hmm. context. So under these limitations, we see that when LLMs were underperforming, it was a sign that it's too early, right? Because even under this limitation, they're underperforming, you know, let's use machine translation. Mm-hmm. Now we see under these limitations, they're basically on par. They're still, and it's very important so that we can compare apples to apples. That's why, you know, this report setting is important. So under these limitations, we see that at the same time, those systems are much slower, like 100 to 1,000 times slower, a lot. Mm-hmm. And but at the same time they're much cheaper, they're like 10 to 20 times cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the important observation. But the most important, where I would say the most interesting change in the industry which is happening right now, is actually currently not captured by the report. We're actually thinking how to change it next year to capture it. And what's changed is that once you remove these limitations, once you can do full text, once you can supply metadata, once you can involve multiple models in the solution and not just one step machine translation, you can actually get to dramatically better quality. I would say, again, it's like a bold claim, but I think if you put enough effort, you can actually configure what we call perfect translation for almost every use case.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it would be quite expensive in effort to build it. It's lots of engineering.
Yeah.
But it's possible thanks to large language models. And that's the biggest change.
Costanta, you're talking about the customization at this point, correct?
Because yes.
Customizing the deployment of machine translation. Are we at a point where we can, I don't know, the industry needs to come up with a better, I want to say, naming for these two technologies, machine translation and LLM. As you mentioned earlier, some of them are using LLM in the background. And I think there's a bit more now of, you know, they're almost being integrated together in a way that forming one solution. They're not separate in some cases. I think one naming for all of them would be, you know, let's put them mm-hmm. under the umbrella of machine translation for the sake of this conversation, right? So
mm-hmm. Okay.
I want your opinion, if you don't mind. A lot of our audience ask, especially in the regulated industry, and they're concerned about machine translations, A, being a public domain versus something that they control, they can deploy on their side of the behind their firewall. And what is your opinion on, you know, publicly available machine translations that are out there, like, you know, the big brands that we know about, and or deploying it behind a firewall in a what is the pros and cons?
I think there was a number of misconceptions here related to maybe the words we use, because what you call cloud systems versus, say, private cloud or on-premise systems. And cloud systems, they're by no means in public domain. AWS provides government cloud. You know, the most kept secrets
right.
run on this cloud.
Yep.
None of the regulated industries you mentioned can compare their secrets to those secrets.
Yep.
Right? And it's all right. And I would say if you compare a security in AWS or Microsoft or Google data center to your freelancer going with, you know, their laptop to a bar to work on this project late night, guess where you have better security?
Not the bar.
one of the companies quite sensitive to the security of the data which we work with, they actually changed their opinion after getting into more details. And now with their request that, okay, if data goes to AI, it can go as is, no problem, because they know all the terms and, you know, protections and measures.
Yep.
But if the data, like if there is a sign that the data needs to go to post-editing, to an LSP, it needs to be redacted.
Okay.
On its way out, and then kind of details need to be added back on its way back, because they realize that humans are much more prone to security issues.
Generally, it's a user error, right?
Yeah, so what I can answer, so we see, as a matter of fact, we see that in the last couple of years, quite regulated industries starting to use cloud machine translation,
yep.
such as financial sector, pharmaceuticals, and governments. We see that with LLMs, it's kind of the same, but better. So why it's the same? Because the same kind of approach applies. No one can use your data. If you train your model, it's kind of only you can use this model, and so on. But what changed, since people have much more concerns about LLMs, right? Actually, LLM providers, they have to spell out those details in more detail. Like if you look at this kind of data protection part of OpenAI contract, it's like 10 times more detailed than of any kind of traditional machine translation. You know where your data is, how it's being processed, how it's being encrypted, what happens at every step. So just very detailed. We built kind of white paper, just where we collected all this information together about security measures. So I would say that unless it's a hard compliance requirement, which happens sometimes today still, from if you just use a business reasoning, there's no reason to limit performance of the system by bringing it, you know, in-house.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask you, Costanza, like on the performance side. Regardless of the part where, you know, the system itself being on the cloud or not on the cloud, let's agree that cloud is as secure as being, in a premise environment.
Yeah.
From a performance perspective, is there a less gains or no gains when you go on premise versus on the cloud, or on the cloud is more better performance than behind a firewall?
Well, there is definitely no gains. I think there is. It's more like a question: how much drawbacks?
Drawbacks, yeah, that's right.
because you know, there are a few considerations. So one of them is also another thing which we do in every report: we actually compare open source systems to commercial systems.
Okay,
and both for machine translation for LLMs, there is basically a step back if you go open source. And if you build your own system, you probably have to do it on the open source. There are some systems which are available for private cloud installation, like commercially. Here, I don't know.
Okay.
It's probably, maybe there is no drawbacks, but you need to think about total cost of ownership in this case, because yes, you may have an agreement that you can just install it and use it, you know, without any limitation.
Yep.
But someone has to deploy and scale those GPUs. Someone has to manage this system when it goes down, and so on and so forth. So total cost of ownership is absolutely higher. Yeah. I would say that. And yes, if you're a very big company, then maybe you can get one of these major systems deployed on your premises in your cloud, but again, that's probably, we're talking about millions of dollars.
Yeah. So let's move to the topic in your report where you've covered the real-time translation, which is different than the localization industry. We're already aware of you know how to use machine translation. Basically, for the audience who don't know, you cut and paste your mm-hmm. information in. That's pretty rudimentary. And then the machine translation will give you back the output. And if you are to upload a document, you have to wait a little bit for the information to come back to you translated. In the real-time translation environment, I guess the conversation here is a little different because we're talking about instantaneous translation. And those applications could be in video or audio or any other multimedia streaming environment and/or other application for it, I'm assuming, right, Costanza?
So. I think I use slightly different meaning of this word. So for us, we kind of distinguish, when I say real-time translation, I mean things like live chats.
Okay.
Things like on-the-fly website translation. We have lots of content.
Okay.
We have much less requests to this content. You have some rare languages. And in this case, there are strict limitation to response time, say half a second, maybe 2 seconds max. which means that we cannot really use directly all those new technologies because they're too slow, like LLMs are too slow. But and there are some additional requirements. Like, for example, for live chats, you have lots of requirements related to colloquial speech, such as tone of voice, gender sometimes, which typically don't have for traditional machine translation. Or in the traditional case, you may have a human translator to fix those problems. That's like another specifics of real time, is that there is no way to do post-editing, right? So you have to make the quality right. And like we made some, typically, originally customers were very concerned with, you know, they cannot have a human to watch every translation. What if there is a mistake? And back then, it was like maybe 4 years ago, quality estimation was not there yet back then. So we run some experiments to see what's the user acceptance. Do users, you know, what they think about those fully automatic translations? And we got like less than 2% of escalations, which is about the same as what you would get for human translation as well, actually, because agreement question. So it's more strict requirements for multimedia, for like on-the-fly video translation, basically for interpretation. I think the story is more complex because there are even 2 second delay is not okay. You need to have streaming. You need translation to be produced constantly. And also you need probably some predictive capabilities, like what interpreters do when they interpret, right? They're trying to understand, okay, how this guy gonna finish? we don't do that. And we looked in this direction. I think as of today, just technology is too immature to pursue. Although I've seen some interesting solutions. I think there are some, I don't remember the name of this company, but there's a startup which does automatic interpretation where they use actually LLMs and other technologies by just building like a chain of streaming processing so that it takes some time to, you know, to load up this pipeline.
That's right.
But then it starts to produce translation. Interesting, but we don't do that.
Absolutely. And, you know, real-time translation, it's becoming more and more needed in our world where we live today, especially with everything that is going on. And especially it got really interesting or really in demand and hot demand, you know, during and post-pandemic that we just went through, where everybody went to, you know, speed up the electronic communication process for all of us as a humanity, where people now are engaged, a lot more engaged, and there's no more face-to-face interfacing. So, you know, from talking to your telephone company or your cable company to actually talking to your doctor, everything is about live chat. And it brought up to the surface, the important, and the two is the complexity of managing multiple demographics in the same area. I mean, any major city in North America would have like 100 languages represented in it. And try to, you know, communicate all of us in one unit language sometimes is challenging. Therefore, you need that assistance. And that's what brought up the interest in real-time translation.
Yeah. And, you know, also, there's a couple of other things here. The big difference from traditional approach is that it's a solution. It's not something which you just use as a tool and then you continue your, you know, to do your human process. It works by itself.
Yep.
So it's a very different approach. And today, you know, back probably a few years ago, it was like this discussion around human in the loop versus full auto, right? And in real time, it's only full auto. There is no human in the loop. And now we see this discussion is actually discourse changing. Now people are talking about co-pilots versus agents, right?
Yep.
And like co-pilots is actually this thing human in the loop. It's how we call tools, like AI tools, which humans use. And there is no real-time requirement because it kind of should be all right for you to work with. And then these agent systems, they built for fully autonomous work. And I think that's where that's where a big overlap between real-time and LLMs. But as of today, it's not possible because of the performance of the LLMs. But that's clearly, it's like one of the things you can predict quite reliably is that once LLMs become just a little bit faster, all this real-time communication will change immediately.
Absolutely. And one of the things for certain is that technology continue to change. And I keep talking about the velocity of these changes, the speed of these changes are accelerating on a daily basis because, in just for our audience in the past, for instance, as something as rudimentary writing a program, it used to take like 6 months to writing a code for something. Now these things are available like within 24 hours. People are writing programs. People are developing things at a much faster speed because the current technology is allowing us to do that. And so I would expect, you know, the changes in our industry to continue at a higher rate in terms of speed. And I expect to see more innovative things coming online, which brings me to your report, the part of the report where you talk about future trends and innovation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Let me think what part you mean.
So we talk a little bit about, you know, just a few things here. We talk about some of the advancement that they're going to be introduced in the machine translation and large language models, as we talked earlier, some of the future trends that you foresee. And yeah, the role of generative AI, for instance, in enhancing the capability, which you alluded to in some applications earlier. And also there are some, one topic, and after you cover this, if you don't mind focusing on one topic that everybody keeps telling me about, which nobody talks about yet, it's still under the radar, cognitive computing. And in cognitive computing, it's something like I'm very interested in because it seems to me, especially now we have got a couple of prototype running, one at IBM and I think Microsoft is working on one too. Wondering how all this, like from what we know now and, you know, the future trend where this is going and the future technology that's going to be coming in is, you know, innovation that we're seeing today, large language models and also machine translation that we're talking about so adamantly today in every conversation may not be the end all be all technology. We may see other technologies coming down the road.
Yeah. You know, I may take quite technical stance here.
That's okay.
Okay. I would say that there are a few directions which we can think of. First, what will be changing in our industry, right? And I would say the most important change in our industry, they in the upcoming like a year or maybe two, maybe more, they will be based on the technology we already have today. And that's like very clearly visible. If you look at the technology we have on LLMs, right? We're already, they're pretty decent. Yes, they may underperform in certain languages, they may underperform in certain domains. It will be fixed. It's clear. But I believe the biggest bottlenecks for the industry now is kind of legacy, different legacy configurations and legacy software systems. And the most of the innovation will be in this field, how basically we remove those roadblocks, we remove those kind of dams, and we let the technology flow and shape the landscape. And like with these two biggest things, which I will not get tired talking about until it's fixed, is that the whole industry works with segments and there is no metadata in the process. Just because the XLIF format and other, you know, data pipelines in the industry do not allow for that. And because that's how translation management systems and capitals build. So as it's a matter of removing roadblocks. It's not a matter of, you know, getting GPT-5 or whatever. If you get GPT-5 with these problems in place, it will change nothing. Because just think, if you have the best translator in the world, human translator, if you feed them sentence by sentence from different projects, not telling what the context is. Well, what quality you'll get.
Right.
Pretty, you'll have to do lots of post-editing after this very best translator. That's what we do today. That's I think, what concerns the industry. Well, the technology changes. I believe that the biggest change, which probably will be coming to systems working with text, like to large language models, is what some people call adding system to thinking, following this Daniel Kahneman framework, but basically enabling them to take some time to think and process your request. There is a way to do that today through what's called chain of thought prompting,
right?
Which in our human terms, basically you make system think aloud. And that's the only way they can think now, because they work. I'm not sure if kind of lots of people understand that, but LLMs work in a way that whatever it's generated, it immediately takes as input. That's why if this complex problem by making verbalize actions, it just starts to think by saying that. So what we all need and wait is until when they can do that by themselves without us being creative with prompting.
Are you imagining at this point, sorry, Constantine, are you imagining singularity at that point or not yet?
I'm not sure what's that.
Everybody talks about it from a different perspective. So I lost the definition of singularity at this point. So,
I think there's lots of buzzword misconceptions here because, I mean, currently what we're all trying to do, and I think what industry is trying to do mostly, is to make LLM as able as a human person.
Mm.
But we should not, there's no kind of super intelligence. I mean, we all human persons.
Yes.
What kind of singularity we achieved, each of us individually?
Yeah.
None, right? We just want LLM to be our reliable partner, agent, some entity who can make our lives easier, who can help us to do creative stuff and have it do boring stuff. And okay, maybe it may do boring creative stuff, but we'll do fun creative stuff. Humans always will find how to get fun, right? Super intelligence when it's all converges and, you know, maybe, we'll see. I believe that definitely the speed of kind of scientific progress will increase dramatically. Honestly, I personally do not believe in singularity happening just because we have so many physical, sociological, economical constraints in our world,
yep,
which will prevent it converging,
correct,
to something totally new.
Correct. No, this is very, very interesting and enlightening and very educational for me and for the audience. Constantine, thank you very much for taking part of this conversation. So what's next here for in terms of what you'd like to see coming out of the report that you published? And, you know, if the world was a blank sheet of paper, what would you like to see coming out of this?
Interesting. I don't know. I mean, we see that this report, it's built when machine translation was the only thing we can use, right?
Yep.
And now it's kind of its role, it's not enough to build a complete solution, right, based on this report or based on this side from this report.
Yep.
It gives information about like materials, building blocks,
mm-hmm.
But that's it. So we're looking how to change the approach, and you will see some of the work which we'll be publishing soon, hopefully, which will be about how far you can get by moving from segment-based to a full sentence, paragraph-based translation,
yeah,
and how far you can get if you use LLMs not only for translation, but for other things to improve the quality. And basically, our goal is how much better quality you can get if you use modern technology without old limitations. Depending on that, maybe next year we will change the report to reflect that.
Okay.
But there is always, also what's hard here is, I think, is, and many people confirm that the real data, where you see real performance of systems is actually enterprise data, because that's the only data which was not in public domain, which no one has seen. For this report, thanks to it, we have actually produced specific data, which cost like a lot of money for us together. If we decide to change it to this kind of to different report, we'll have to understand how to make it happen. We'll probably will be working on that.
Yeah, so that would be, we're looking forward for that kind of report that probably going to be coming out in 2025, I hope. And I hope, Constantin, you achieve what you hope to achieve out of this conversation today with me on this channel. Hopefully it sheds some light to those who don't know you, those who don't know Intento, or who, those who are not aware of your report. And by the way, it's a very valuable information. And I feel like there's a lot of people who can take advantage of this report. For the audience who are listening to this, if you are interested in downloading the report or in obtaining a copy of the report, please reach out to Constantin Savenkov on his LinkedIn, and he'll be happy to send you a link for the download. Or you can go to Intento, I'm assuming, and you can download the report from there as well. That's intent.to. That's your website. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. Robin, thanks. That's a beautiful way to start my Friday morning.
And thank you for joining me so early. It's like, what is it, 7 o'clock for you or something? 7:30?
Yeah.
It's almost 8 o'clock now, so it's not too bad.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I appreciate it. I really enjoyed this conversation. I really enjoyed meeting you. And I hope this is not the last time you come to this channel and share some good news with the audience. And for the audience, I want to mention that also that I've only been doing this as a personal effort since March 2023. We are now ranked number 11 in the industry, and that says something. We have close to 280,000 views on YouTube. That's not including the podcast downloads, and that's not including the blog site as well. So we're putting the conversation broad and wide for the industry, because I feel it's one of the industries that's underrepresented in terms of how many messages are we sending out there, how many conversations we're having about this industry out there. We should have more of those dialogues. We should have more of those engagements and these conversations. It helps in many ways. It helps the entrepreneurs such as Constantin and his company, but it also helps demographically with these connections between various demographics. Like my next conversation will be is I'm interviewing an individual who runs a school that teaches various languages in the Dallas area. And that's going to be coming on conversation as well. So the multiple angles that we can talk about languages and the connection as a human brings us together. It's very, very important. So Constantin, thank you so much again for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Robin.
And for the audience again, thank you for listening in if you're coming in on our podcast. And thank you for watching us on YouTube. I really appreciate it. And also thank you for subscribing. Thank you for liking the comment, and thank you for sharing the content with your audience. Thanks again from the Localization Fireside Chat. This is Robin Ayoub and Constantin Svenkov signing off. And until next time, I hope you continue watching for our content. And if you're not part of our WhatsApp group and you'd like to be part of WhatsApp group, just come in and join us. The link is on LinkedIn page, on our LinkedIn page, the Localization Fireside Chat. We'll be happy to have you part of the conversation. Thanks again.